On a crisp autumn day in 1996, New Zealanders stepped into polling booths for a general election that would fundamentally reshape their political landscape. For decades, their democracy had operated under the straightforward, if sometimes brutal, first-past-the-post system, inherited from Britain. But that year, something shifted. A national referendum had led to the adoption of a new way of counting votes, a system called Mixed Member Proportional, or MMP. This was no mere procedural tweak. It was a profound re-engineering of how power would be allocated, a deliberate attempt to move away from the winner-takes-all dynamics that had often left significant portions of the electorate feeling unheard. The election results, a complex mosaic of party negotiations and coalition building, underscored just how much these seemingly technical rules could alter the very fabric of governments. Electoral systems, at their core, are the algorithms of democracy. They are the intricate sets of rules and mechanisms that translate the individual choices made by millions of voters into the composition of legislative bodies. Far from being neutral, these systems are powerful shapers of political reality, influencing everything from the number of parties that can realistically compete to the likelihood of stable governments, and even the very nature of political debate. To understand a country's politics, one must first grasp the electoral system it employs, for it is here that the raw energy of public opinion is channeled, filtered, and ultimately transformed into political power. We often speak of democracy as one person, one vote, but how that vote is counted and what it ultimately achieves can vary dramatically. The principal goal across most democratic electoral systems is to create a legislative body that somehow reflects the will of the people. However, the interpretation of will of the people and the best way to achieve its representation diverge significantly. Some systems prioritize direct accountability of representatives to specific geographic areas, even if it means some votes don't directly contribute to the election of their preferred party. Others aim for a near-perfect reflection of national public opinion in the legislature, even if it means representatives are less tied to a particular locality. And then there are those that attempt to blend these often competing objectives. Let us begin with the simplest and perhaps the most widely recognized system, the plurality system, often known as first-past-the-post, or FPTP. Its name conjures an image of a race, where the first to cross the finish line, no matter by how much, is declared the winner. This system is elegantly straightforward. In each defined electoral district, voters cast a single vote for a single candidate. The candidate who receives the most votes in that district wins the seat. It is crucial to understand that most votes does not necessarily mean an absolute majority, which would be more than 50% of the total votes. A candidate could win with just 35% of the vote if the remaining 65% is split among several other candidates. The defining characteristic of FPTP is its reliance on single-member districts. The entire territory where the election is held is carved up into distinct geographical areas, and each area gets to elect one representative. For instance, in the United Kingdom, the House of Commons is composed of 650 members of Parliament, each representing one of 650 constituencies. A voter in Manchester, for example, votes for one candidate to represent their specific Manchester constituency in the National Parliament. The local nature of this representation is often touted as a major strength, as it theoretically creates a direct and identifiable link between a representative and their constituents. If your roof is leaking and you need help with a government agency, you know precisely which individual politician to contact. The mechanism by which votes translate into representation under FPTP can, however, lead to outcomes that strike some as fundamentally unfair. Imagine an election in a district where candidate A gets 35% of the vote, candidate B gets 33%, and candidate C gets 32%. Candidate A wins the seat, yet a full 65% of the voters in that district preferred someone else. This phenomenon is often termed disproportionality. On a national scale, this can manifest dramatically. A party might win a large number of seats across the country, forming a government, even if its national vote share is significantly less than 50%. This creates what is sometimes called a manufactured majority, where the electoral system, rather than the raw preferences of the electorate, is responsible for giving a party a commanding lead. The 2019 UK general election provides a clear illustration. The Conservative Party won a landslide 365 seats, 56.2% of the total, with just 43.6% of the national vote. Countries like the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and India are prominent examples of nations that rely heavily on FBTP. In the US, the election of the House of Representatives is a classic FBTP exercise. Each state is divided into congressional districts, and voters in each district elect one representative based on plurality. One of the most frequently cited advantages of FBTP is its tendency to produce strong, single-party majority governments. When one party wins a clear majority of seats, it can typically govern without needing to form coalitions or compromise extensively with other parties. This can lead to more decisive policymaking and the perception of greater governmental stability, as the government is less beholden to the shifting demands of multiple coalition partners. Proponents argue that this makes governments more accountable, as the responsibility for successes and failures rests squarely with a single party. However, this stability often comes at a cost. FBTP systems inherently favor larger parties and can actively disadvantage smaller ones. The logic is simple. If a party's support is geographically dispersed, and it can only secure, say, 10-20% of the vote in many districts, it might not win any seats, even if its national vote share is substantial. This often leads to the consolidation of political power into two dominant parties, creating what is known as a two-party system. Voters, recognizing this dynamic, might engage in strategic voting, where they cast their ballot not for their most preferred candidate or party, but for a less preferred one who stands a better chance of winning and preventing an even less preferred outcome. This can lead to a sense that votes for smaller parties are wasted, potentially depressing voter turnout in areas where the outcome feels predetermined or where preferred smaller parties have no realistic chance. The geographic concentration of support is another consequence. Parties learn to focus their resources on swing districts, those where the outcome is uncertain, while neglecting safe seats where their victory or defeat is almost guaranteed. This can lead to an uneven distribution of political attention and resources, with some areas receiving disproportionate focus while others are largely ignored. Critics of FBTP often argue that it is fundamentally undemocratic because it frequently produces governments that lack the support of a majority of the population. They contend that it distorts the will of the people, suppresses diverse voices, and makes it extremely difficult for new or smaller political movements to gain a foothold in the legislature. Yet, supporters champion its simplicity, the clear link between constituents and their representatives, and its tendency to foster strong, stable governance. This ongoing debate about its merits and drawbacks highlights the fundamental trade-offs inherent in all electoral system designs. In stark contrast to the winner-takes-all philosophy of FBTP, proportional representation PR systems are built on an entirely different principle: fairness in representation. The core aim of PR is to ensure that the distribution of seats in the legislature accurately reflects the distribution of votes cast for political parties. If a party garners 20% of the national vote, then, ideally, it should secure approximately 20% of the legislative seats. This vision of proportionality drives a wide array of systems, though the most common variant is party list proportional representation. In party list PR, the focus shifts from individual candidates in small districts to political parties as national entities. Voters typically cast a ballot for a political party, not for an individual. The entire country might be treated as one large constituency, or it might be divided into several large multi-member districts, each electing many representatives. Parties submit pre-arranged lists of candidates for these districts or the entire nation. Once the votes are counted, mathematical formulas such as the D'Hondt method or the Saint-Lagan method are applied to allocate seats to parties in proportion to their vote share. For example, if a country has 100 parliamentary seats and Party X wins 30% of the national vote, it would be allocated around 30 seats, which are then filled by the candidates at the top of Party X's list. Many PR systems incorporate an electoral threshold. This is a minimum percentage of the national vote that a party must achieve to be eligible for any seats. For example, a 5% threshold means that any party failing to secure at least 5% of the national vote will win no seats, regardless of their support. This mechanism is designed to prevent excessive fragmentation of the legislature, where a multitude of tiny parties could make coalition formation unmanageable. Countries like Spain, Sweden, and the Netherlands utilize various forms of party list PR. Israel, for instance, uses a national list system with a relatively low threshold, which has historically led to a highly proportional parliament but also a complex multi-party political landscape requiring frequent coalition building. The most celebrated consequence of PUR systems is their high degree of proportionality. They accurately mirror the diversity of political opinion within the electorate, ensuring that almost every vote counts towards electing a representative for a preferred party. This encourages the formation and participation of multiple political parties, as even smaller parties have a realistic chance of winning seats if they can surpass the electoral threshold. The result is often a multi-party system, which supporters argue offers voters a wider range of ideological choices and ensures that minority voices are not entirely shut out of the legislative process. However, this electoral fairness often comes with its own set of challenges. Because it is rare for any single party to win an outright majority under PUR, coalition governments are the norm. While coalitions can lead to broader consensus and more inclusive policymaking, they can also be prone to instability. Negotiations to form a government can be protracted and difficult, and coalition agreements can sometimes collapse, leading to frequent elections or periods of political uncertainty. The average lifespan of a government in countries with PUR systems tends to be shorter than in those with FBTP. Furthermore, critics argue that in party list systems, voters may feel less connected to individual representatives, as their vote is primarily for a party. Party leaders, rather than voters, often hold significant power in determining the order of candidates on the lists, influencing who gets elected. Debates surrounding PUR often center on this tension between representativeness and governability. Supporters champion its democratic legitimacy, arguing that a legislature that truly reflects the people's will is inherently more just. They contend that PUR forces parties to appeal to a broader base and encourages compromise. Critics, on the other hand, express concerns about potential governmental instability, the perceived lack of direct accountability of individual representatives, and the possibility that very small or even extremist parties could gain a platform in the legislature, though thresholds are designed to mitigate this, seeking to bridge the divide between the local accountability of FBTP and the representational fairness of PUR. A third category of electoral systems emerged, mixed-member systems. The most prominent and effective variant of this is mixed-member proportional MMP, sometimes known as the additional member system AMS. This ingenious hybrid attempts to combine the best of both worlds, offering voters a say in local representation while ensuring overall proportionality at the national level. In an MMP system, voters typically cast two distinct votes. One vote is for a candidate in their local single-member constituency, much like in an FBTP system. The candidate with the most votes in that constituency wins the seat. The second vote, however, is for a political party on a regional or national list. This second vote is the crucial mechanism that ensures proportionality. After the constituency seats are allocated, the party list votes are used to top up or adjust the overall seat distribution in the legislature. If a party wins fewer constituency seats than its national party vote share would proportionally entitle it to, it receives additional seats from its party list until its overall seat count aligns with its proportional share. Let's illustrate with an example from Germany, a prime user of MMP for its Bundestag elections. Half of the Bundestag's members are elected directly from single-member constituencies using plurality. The other half are elected from state-level party lists. The critical feature is that the total number of seats a party receives in the Bundestag is primarily determined by its share of the second votes the party votes. If a party wins a disproportionately high number of local constituency seats compared to its national party vote share, it might not receive any additional list seats. In some cases, this can lead to overhang seats, where a party receives more constituency seats than its proportional share, causing the overall size of the legislature to temporarily increase to maintain proportionality for other parties. New Zealand's adoption of MMP in 1996, mentioned at the outset, provides a compelling case study of its impact. Prior to MMP, New Zealand's FBTP system had often resulted in single-party governments, even when the winning party secured a minority of the popular vote. The shift to MMP brought an immediate increase in the number of parties represented in Parliament, a greater diversity of voices, and a consistent pattern of coalition or minority governments, reflecting the more nuanced preferences of the electorate. The core benefit of MMP is its ability to deliver a legislature that is highly proportional while also maintaining a direct link between local constituents and their representatives. Voters have a specific individual they can hold accountable for local issues, but their broader ideological preferences are also accurately reflected in the national parliament. This makes MMP systems attractive to those who value both local accountability and national representativeness. However, MMP systems can be more complex for voters to understand compared to simpler FBTP systems. The distinction between the two votes and how they interact to determine the final seat allocation requires a greater degree of civic literacy. While MMP generally produces a high degree of proportionality, it can, like pure PR, still lead to the formation of coalition governments, which some critics view as less stable or decisive than single-party majorities. Debates sometimes arise over the fairness of overhang seats and the potential for a party's total representation to be somewhat disconnected from its direct constituency victories. Despite these complexities, many scholars and reformers view MMP as an intelligent compromise, balancing competing democratic imperatives. Beyond these three major categories, other electoral systems exist, each with its own unique approach to translating votes into representation. Rank choice voting RCV, also known as instant runoff voting IRV, is gaining traction in some jurisdictions, particularly in the United States for local and some state-level elections, and is used for some federal elections in Australia. In RCV, voters don't just pick one candidate. They rank them in order of preference: first choice, second choice, third choice, and so on. If no candidate wins an absolute majority more than 50% of first preference votes, the candidate with the fewest first preference votes is eliminated. Their votes are then redistributed to the voters' second choices. This process continues, eliminating candidates and redistributing votes, until one candidate achieves an absolute majority. The aim of RCV is to ensure that the winning candidate has broader support, preventing a candidate from winning with a mere plurality when a majority of voters might prefer someone else. It also aims to reduce wasted votes and discourage negative campaigning, as candidates might need second or third preferences from supporters of rival candidates. Another fascinating system is the single transferable vote, STV. This is a form of proportional representation used in multi-member constituencies, most famously in Ireland and for some Australian elections. Voters again rank candidates in order of preference. The system is designed to achieve proportionality while giving voters more choice among candidates, even within the same party. A complex quota system is used to determine how many votes a candidate needs to be elected. Surplus votes from elected candidates and votes from eliminated candidates are transferred according to voter preferences, ensuring that as few votes as possible are wasted. STV is often considered one of the most proportional systems, offering both party and candidate choice. The choice of an electoral system is never a neutral, purely technical decision. It is a profoundly political act, reflecting a society's deeply held values, its historical experiences, and its priorities for democratic governments. There is a perpetual balancing act between various ideals. Firstly, representativeness. How accurately does the legislature mirror the diversity of political opinions, demographic groups, and ideological leanings within the electorate? PVR systems prioritize this heavily, while FBTP often sacrifices it for other goals. Secondly, accountability. How effectively can voters hold their elected representatives or parties responsible for their actions? FBTP often champions individual accountability to a local constituency, whereas PR focuses more on party accountability for national policy. Thirdly, governability and stability. Does the system consistently produce governments that can effectively make decisions and maintain stability? FBTP systems are often praised for producing strong, stable, single-party governments, while PR systems, with their tendency towards coalitions, can be perceived as less stable, though proponents argue that coalition governments are more legitimate and broadly supported. Fourthly, simplicity. How easy is the system for ordinary citizens to understand and participate in? FBTP is often lauded for its simplicity, while more complex systems like MMP or SDV require greater voter education. The ongoing debates among scholars and practitioners highlight the dynamic and contested nature of electoral system design. There is no single, universally best system, as what works effectively in one political culture or historical context might be entirely inappropriate in another. Scholars continue to examine the optimal balance between proportionality and governmental stability, probing how much of one can be achieved without sacrificing the other. The ideal level for electoral thresholds to prevent excessive legislative fragmentation without stifling nascent political movements, the impact of different systems on voter turnout and political engagement, the advantages and disadvantages of candidate-centered versus party-centered voting, and the mathematical fairness of different seat allocation formulas, some of which can subtly favor larger or smaller parties. Moreover, in a world of rapidly evolving political landscapes with the rise of new social movements, independent candidates, and changing demographics, electoral systems are constantly being tested for their adaptiveness. Can existing systems adequately capture and channel these new expressions of public will, or do they rigidify political competition in ways that ultimately undermine democratic responsiveness? These questions underscore that electoral systems are living instruments of democracy, perpetually subject to scrutiny, debate, and, at times, radical reform. They are the scaffolding upon which democratic power is built, and their design dictates not just who gets elected, but how effectively a society can articulate its collective will and navigate its future.